This is Second Look, only on 103.3 WZND. Here to take a second look at the stories the WZND Newsroom has covered this week. Investigative reporting from the award-winning WZND News Team, here for you. Unbiased, engaging, and comprehensive. Second Look starts now.
And welcome to this week's episode of Second Look, the show where we take an in-depth second look at last week's stories.
I'm Luke Biondi.
And I'm Colleen Holden. Today we will be looking at the future of sustainability in Bloomington Normal, ISU's provost plans for the university moving forward, an update on the Bloomington City Council, and a press conference with Kristen Gillespie and the Redbird women's basketball team following their win against UIC on Thursday.
The town of Normal is looking for community feedback on ways the town can be more sustainable and improve the quality of life in the area. John Rosny from the news team has more.
So first things first, if you just want to explain briefly to our listeners, what does this sustainability plan seek to accomplish for the town of Normal?
So since 1990, the town of Normal has pulled together a group of diverse citizens to create a vision plan for the town. So it's the vision of what those citizens would like our community to look like 25 years in the future. And so this has been done since 1990, every 5 years. So here we are all these years later. And every now and again, the mayor, who actually appoints this group, he will come up with kind of a focus that he would like the group to take. Back in 2010, the focus was on sustainability. So the vision plan in 2010 was actually also a sustainability plan. And so this year we're doing the same thing, where it's a new sustainability plan that we're calling Vision 2050. Because again, we're looking out 25 years into the future.
Are there any aspects of sustainability that you're focusing on for this plan here?
Well, we're still in the early stages of the process. We're gathering together information from local experts, different stakeholder groups, and then the steering committee itself, which is a diverse group of people, kind of gathering their thoughts together and trying to figure out what are the major components of this plan and then how might we prioritize things.
Now, I would say Normal is a very unique area. You've got many of the schools around. You've also got the business landscape, which is around as well. I would say it presents a very interesting dynamic with the demographics that's there. There's people that are often in and out of the area. Have you guys factored that into your survey, or how are you planning on addressing that?
Well, so the survey is targeted at people who live here, who work here, or who visit here. So we really do want to hear from all of those people. So depending on how transient they are, you know, maybe they're just here for 4 years for school. Maybe they're only here for a few years for a State Farm job. It's hard to say. People can rotate in and out at Rivian. But we want all of their input. And through social media, you really can reach all sorts of people. So we're looking for a pretty broad type of input from people who either come to Normal or live here.
Following the sudden resignation of former university president Terry Goss Kinsey, the then university provost Anduve Tarhule stepped up as interim president, leaving Ani Yasajin to take over as provost. Now permanently in the position, Audra Goff from the news team sat down with them to discuss their solidified position and what they hope to achieve with it.
Increase the amount in investing in tutoring and then in these kind of success classes for new students.
Amazing.
Yeah, I have more.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
On the faculty side, this was something that the current president, when he was provost, came up with the idea, and we were able to implement it this year. But we call it ARCS, A-R-C-S, which is Advancing Research and Creative Scholarship. And that's an opportunity for faculty to work together in interdisciplinary teams to help kind of work on projects that solve, we call them wicked problems. So really problems that society faces. We know that a lot of those things can't be solved by a person in just one discipline. So one of the requirements was for people to work across units, and we selected three interdisciplinary teams for this first go round, and we're providing that financial support for them to do their work. One of the other things, I think it's really important to hear from people. So, you know, I set up some what I'm calling listening sessions. I started those last spring, and every semester I do a couple. It's open to faculty and staff, and they can just pop in during that scheduled time. We give cookies, and it's really an opportunity for me to hear from people. I do, there is a group of students as well who are an advisory group to the work that we do in the provost office, so I've met with them as well. And then we're finalizing our search for the dean of the Wansuk Kim College of Fine Arts.
Cool.
So we've had those candidates on campus last week and the week before, and hopefully we'll make an announcement soon. So those are some of the things with respect to people. We also have a master's in physics that's at the IBHE right now. Hopefully that'll get approved in March. We're working on a new undergraduate degree in data science, which is going to be one of our first really interdisciplinary programs on campus, because students will take foundational classes in business, College of Applied Science and Technology, and the computer in the information technology side. And then, hold on a second, I gotta think about my three colleges.
No worries.
Oh, and math. So in the College of Arts and Sciences in the math department. So their core degree is going to be in those areas. And then they get to pick a sequence or kind of a concentration in one of five different areas so they can tailor that degree to their interests. So that's another one that we're working on. And then we're also working on a proposal to IBHE for a new undergraduate degree in sports communication. So those are a few. We've started some new graduate certificates as well. Some of those are going to be online so that we can meet the needs of adult learners who can't necessarily come to campus. Mm-hmm. And then we're working on accelerated sequences as well. We have a few of those in the pipeline, which are basically 4+1 degree programs. So students can come and get their bachelor's degree in their senior year. They can take graduate classes at undergraduate tuition rates, so that then by the time they become, they go into the graduate program, they only have to pay for a year of graduate school versus two. So we think that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
Also, when academic units hire faculty, they will give them, cover some of their startup expenses. So you can imagine, for example, a faculty member in biology or in chemistry, they need to develop their own lab, right? They need to buy equipment for a lab to do their research. So we developed a program in this office where we are actually paying 70% of those costs to academic units.
Oh, cool.
Where before they didn't get that. And it's a short-term program. We've just committed to 4 years of this on the front end just to see how it goes. And then that frees up the money, the unit resources, to be able to spend it on other initiatives that will benefit their unit. So that's one other thing that we did. We're also looking at our faculty diversity enhancement program that's been in place, and we've had some, you know, other articles recently about that and the investment the university is making in that. But this year, what we're looking at is it working? How's it working? What's going? I mean, we feel like it is working. Let me just say that. We have very good retention rates of the faculty that we hire with that program. But what is making it work well? You know, what are the things that we are doing right that we could continue to scale up? What are some areas of improvement, et cetera?
All right. What's one thing that you enjoy about your position being acting provost?
Yeah, so it's hard for me. I don't know that I can say one, but yeah. Maybe I'll say one very long thing that
includes
lots of different things. But it really is just the opportunity to work with people from across different divisions to have a positive impact on the students, faculty, and staff at ISU. And so generally, I like to make things happen, and I want to make a difference in people's lives. Yeah. So this role is kind of a good fit for me.
Awesome.
Because, you know, what I want to do is kind of remove some of those barriers too, and do things that people don't even notice because it's not there anymore.
Right.
You know, so there are some big flashy things that you can do, but also just make life easier, right?
Mm-hmm.
Make it easier for faculty to submit their grades, or make it, you know, easier for students to get the support that they need.
Right.
So those are not necessarily things that people will notice and say, oh, you know,
right,
this is this big thing, but it is something that moves the university forward.
Yeah. And my final question for you is, what's a rewarding moment that you can remember within the last year as provost?
Yeah. So again, I don't have one. I can't narrow
it. Yeah, I know.
But, you know, I think to me, it's really just been a very rewarding and a privilege to be able to hear from people,
right,
and then be able to do something about it. So I'll give you a couple of examples. I was in a meeting with academic advisors sometime maybe in the early fall, and someone said, is it possible, you know, just to get the Wednesday before Thanksgiving for the university to close, to get that day off? And I said, well, I don't know, you know, because that's not my decision. But I was able to relay that to the president, and he thought about it and, you know, made the decision that we would close the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. So that was something that I think was really appreciated by the staff.
Right.
Very little to do with me. You know, I was just kind of the messenger, but it was I had the opportunity to play a small part in that.
Right.
For me, I would say professionally, you know, differential tuition, that's something that was rewarding because I was able to have meetings with the Ethnic Senate and with the student government and different groups and kind of explain the concept to them. And we had lots of meetings with the Board of Trustees and lots of different opinions. But I think we were able to get to a point where people understood why that was important for the institution.
Yeah.
And then a funny one that I will end with is, I don't know if you know the map, the campus map. On the quad?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I spent the first 5.5 years at ISU in Turner Hall as the department chair in FCS. So I didn't really know the rest of campus.
Right.
And when I moved into Hubby, I really needed to use that map to kind of find these other buildings. And I found the map to be very confusing.
Right.
And when I became provost, I realized I can do something about that map because I had told people before, I was like, this is a terrible map. It doesn't make any sense. You know, if the mall can figure out how to create a map that, right, you know, people can understand, why can't we do that?
Right.
And so when I became the provost, I said, I want a new map. And last week I walked across the quad and there is a new map.
Okay.
So I was super excited. It makes more intuitive sense to me. And really it's a small thing, but to me it was important because the people who use the map are the people who don't know ISU.
Right.
Right. And so it's there to help those people and it should make sense. It should be easy to understand because when we have people on campus, we want them to feel welcome. We want them to feel like they know where they're going. And so that was one small thing, but that, you know, really helped.
Yeah.
I feel very rewarded by it because I was able to kind of see something and then do something about it.
Amazing.
The university is currently in the process of finding a permanent president. The identities of the candidates are currently unknown to the public, but will be revealed before they each appear at a public forum Q&A. The first candidate forum will take place tomorrow.
We'll return after a quick break in which we'll discuss local developments that have occurred in the last week here in the Bloomington Normal area, as well as local sports results and a post-game press conference with Coach Kristen Gillespie and the Redbird women's basketball team.
News now on 103.3 WZND.
At the recent Bloomington City Council meeting, Mayor Mboka Milwambwe honored members of the Central Illinois Woodworkers Club on their construction of the number 23 locomotive playset at Empire Junction Park. Parks and Rec Department Assistant Director Dave Lamb thanked the court for the achievement.
I wanted to acknowledge the hard work that the Central Illinois Woodworkers Club did and the contribution of time, labor, and skill that they donated to the city. And they built a train. This train's at Empire Junction Park. It's along Constitution Trail, one of our linear parks along the trail that used to be part of the old Norfolk Southern Rail line years ago, was converted over to trail during the Rail to Trails projects.
The search for Illinois State University's new president is down to the last four candidates. These four candidates were selected from a group of 41 original candidates that will participate in open forums in the Bone Student Center held throughout February. The bios of the four candidates will be released today.
Five dining establishments in Bloomington have been issued a $600 fine for selling alcohol to minors. Among the establishments cited are local eatery hotspots Fiesta Ranchera and Outback Steakhouse. The Bloomington Police Department says they often conduct undercover operations in which people younger than 21 are sent to restaurants to buy alcohol, and the companies have complied entirely in paying the fines.
Connect Transit has been awarded six new vehicles valued at around $750,000 as part of a larger grant being awarded to statewide transit agencies by the Illinois Department of Transportation. About $1 million of the $57 million grant is allocated for Central Illinois transit agencies, including agencies in Peoria, Galesburg, and Putnam County. The IDOT claims that this grant comes as a part of an overall effort by the Pritzker administration to increase accessibility to public transit services.
In local sports, yesterday, women's basketball defeated Valparaiso 78-64, and softball lost in their matchup against Berkeley 5-2. Women's tennis will match up against DePaul today at 12:30. Coming later this afternoon, men's basketball will have a game at home against Evansville at 2 p.m. Tomorrow and Tuesday, men's golf will participate in the Border Olympics at the University of Houston.
The University High School girls basketball team will participate in the IHSA sectionals on Tuesday. On Wednesday, boys basketball will participate in the IHSA regional playoffs.
On Thursday, the Redbird women's basketball team defeated UIC by a neck at 64-61. Following the game, WZND's Jameson Warfield and Logan O'Brien attended a press conference with Kristen Gillespie and the rest of the team to discuss what went right during the game and where the team could improve.
64-61 for the Redbirds. We have Maya Wong, who had 12 points. Go ahead, three. Redbirds getting down at 12 points, five rebounds. And then Abby Alzma, 8 points and 2-4 from three. Take a statement from Coach G. Open it up.
Yeah, I think this games like these are kind of season defining at this juncture of the conference. If we come up short, it's hard to bounce back after the weekend we had. And I didn't think we played outstanding the first 35 minutes. I thought we played okay. They made a lot of shots. They did some really good things. I got to give them a ton of credit. But for us to dig in and find a way to win, I think this is pivotal. This is what we needed, and now this gets us back on track. And it's just what I loved is there were so many people that played such a part in this. From the start of the game to down the stretch, we talked about being your best version of yourself in your role before the game. And I just talked to Brooke Coffey. I mean, she turns it over. She chases her the young lady down, gets a block. She takes a charge. We don't win the game without those. Now, that doesn't equate to points, but just that buy-in.
After that meeting you guys just had on June 1st, like what you're saying, 35 minutes, the most adversity you guys have faced in quite some time, how are you guys able to respond there, especially after D did follow?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody did a really nice job of like trusting the process. I know last weekend we kind of got a little bit rattled and, you know, maybe tried to really force some things that weren't there, but I feel like everybody really bought in and just trusted what the coaches had planned for us, and it just ended up getting us in a move.
By that last three-pointer kind of presented itself to you?
Yeah, I mean, I owe that one to Drew, actually. They originally thought that they were chasing me off of that play, but they were cutting, so, you know, the range either a pop for a shot or a handoff to get downhill, and just trusted Drew's read, and he got me that shot. So,
Coach, can you talk a little bit about the crowd there in the last 5 minutes?
I mean, that they made the difference. You know, I thought a really big play in the game was a technical foul. I think that was a huge momentum shift, and I think that sparked something in our fans, too. And then it got so loud. And I mean, that's tough. Like, you know, when we're coming back, we take the lead, we tie it, and it was so loud. I think there was a little confusion on their end because of the crowd noise. And I mean, that's something you feed off, and that's why we love playing at home. And, you know, I know for the first 35 minutes, there was some moments to get excited for, but, man, they stuck with us, and we're just so thankful.
Abby, what was the kind of the team feeling when you're down a pretty good amount and B falls out? What was important to kind of get going in the right direction there?
To keep our heads up. Even though D was fouled, I think we did a good job picking up for her. Just working as a team, and just we had grit, which is something we've been lagging a little bit. And I'm proud of how we responded despite that, because that's adversity. And it was tough, but we bounced back.
Team wasn't getting to the free throw line much, and when you did, there were usually misses until those last few minutes. Tell me what your mindset was going to the line and having those big free throws to shoot.
We really needed them. Everybody kept telling me, Maya was like, no pressure or anything, but we need these. But Kate was like, no, we're good. So we really needed them. I made them for Maya.
I think I saw before those last two, Maya put her hand on your shoulder, and you both kind of smiled.
That probably was it. She was like, no pressure, but we need these.
Just trying to keep a light there, Maya. Kristen, I know she's done it. That's the first time she's done that this season, but for Shannon to really come through in the critical moments in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, you know, Shannon's maturity and her poise is beyond her years. And, you know, what I love about Shannon is she had a tough weekend last weekend. And what a lot of you guys don't see is she was in the gym every single day this week. she took that personally, and that's a trait of someone that's going to be great, and these guys are great examples for her, considering all the time. But when Shannon goes to the line, if she misses, I'm surprised. Like, it's like a shock. And, you know, I always show it, like, we watched her win the state championship last year by hitting free throws. She's really comfortable doing that, and I don't think the pressure gets to her. And for a freshman to do that in such an emotional comeback win, just so proud of Shannon.
Chris, when I talked to you before the game, you said you needed to win at the foul line.
Yeah.
You didn't.
No.
You needed to match your physicality, and you got out-rebounded.
Yep.
How did you pull that off then?
Yeah, you know, and that's something we talked about, like six offensive rebounds, we got to be better, you know. But we found a way. What I thought we did exceptionally well is we had 19 assists and 23 made shots. We really shared the ball, and that's been a big point of emphasis the last couple of weeks. You know, can I drive to not necessarily score, but to draw people and kick? And, you know, we hit some critical shots. And, you know, I think when they thought D fouled out, I thought they, you know, maybe they thought the momentum shifted there. And we found ways. And that's what you have to do. Our league is really good. You know, this was huge. Like I said, if we come short, man, this is tough to bounce back if you look for the next couple weeks of what we're trying to accomplish as a team. So this one was huge.
The Redbirds' record currently sits at 16-8 following their most recent win against Valparaiso.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Second Look. Today we discussed future improvements to ISU and the Bloomington Normal area and an update on the Bloomington City Council and a press conference with Redbird basketball coach Crispin Gillespie.
I'm Luke Biondi.
And I'm Colleen Holden.
This has been WZND's Second Look. Catch more WZND in-depth news every Sunday at noon with WZND's Bird's Eye View and Second Look. For more WZND news, find us online at WZND.com.